It's a great pleasure to be back at the WTO for this conference on aid for trade. And I'd like to start by thanking my good friend and former colleague, Pascal Lamy, for organizing this important event at a very critical time. I also want to take this occasion to congratulate Pascal for being re-elected unanimously by the WTO General Council. Pascal's leadership, experience, and vision have been and continue to be fundamental to navigating trade negotiations and serving all the WTO members. We couldn't ask for a better person to be leading the WTO at this vital moment. We're in the midst of the most serious global financial and economic crisis in 70 years. The figures are grim. Between October 2008 and April 2009, Central and Eastern European exports were down 35%. East Asian exports down 25%. Latin American exports down 20%. The large fall in trade reflects a more integrated world, where a significant amount of trade is occurring within global supply chains. Each dollar of exports contains more imports than previously, so contracting consumption in high-income countries has a magnified effect on exports from developing economies. Even when we do see a recovery in output, the recovery in employment is likely to lag behind by some 12 to 24 months. So the politics of trade won't be getting easier in coming months. To date, instances of protectionism have been a low-grade fever rather than a full-blown influenza. But the temperature of the fever has been rising. High-income countries have used subsidies for troubled industries, while low-income countries are using selective increases in border barriers. These trends could easily spin out of control in coming months as unemployment rises and one country feels compelled tit for tat to respond defensively to the policies of another. The United States' Buy America provisions are an example that has received some attention as local governments in the United States began discriminating in procurement. Canadian localities started to respond in kind, and both countries suffer. And China has adopted Buy Chinese provisions as part of its government stimulus programs. Shortly after the European Union imposed subsidies for some dairy exports, the United States followed suit with its own dairy export subsidies. Government leaders need to recognize that they're playing with fire. Protectionism is particularly damaging to developing countries, especially those with weak fiscal positions and those that depend heavily on exports of a small number of products. Garments, for example, comprise more than three-quarters of Bangladeshi and Cambodian exports. So even when global growth recovers, protectionist actions that prevent developing countries from benefiting from that pickup will protract the suffering. This need for restraint against trade barriers applies just as much to developing as high-income countries. South-South trade is becoming increasingly important. One-third of Africa's exports go to developing countries. When I was the U.S. Trade Representative, I always felt it was better to be on offense than defense, to be debating how to further open markets rather than just beating back protectionist measures. The successful completion of the Doha round would be the best way to concentrate attention on opening markets, and there's a good deal on the table right now. From a development perspective, the Doha Agreement could provide important disciplines on agricultural subsidies that depress incomes of poor farmers. It could lower tariff peaks that protect labor-intensive manufacturers and curtail tariff escalation that discourages value addition in developing countries. Even for those countries that are not expected to lower applied tariffs of protection, the reduction in tariff bindings provides insurance that markets will stay open. And the value of this insurance has become much more obvious as protectionist pressures have been on the rise. There are also benefits to be gained for lower prices, for imports, and more competitive services. Trade barriers are usually defended by those with preferred positions, and it's the families without special influence who are hurt the most. So the key WTO members need to step up. Leading developed countries have a responsibility to try to solve the remaining problems, but the developing world's engagement is critical too. all of you have the opportunity to shape the multilateral trade architecture for a generation to come. The World Bank Group's Aid for Trade work recognizes that lower trade barriers and trade agreements need to be combined with both stronger hardware and better software to boost trade. We can help with the hardware of ports and infrastructure, but the World Bank Group can also assist with the software of clear customs rules, support for logistics chains and standards, trade finance, and developing a better climate for doing business. Private economic opportunity through trade also involves helping people, especially the poorest and hardest hit, to adjust to new circumstances. The World Bank Group's total lending and investments for trade have doubled from about $10 billion a year during 2002 and 2005 to an average of $20 billion a year in 2007 and 2008. Our aid for trade to low-income countries is funded through the International Development Association, or IDA, which provides grants and no-interest loans to the 79 poorest countries. IDA's aid for trade financing has risen from $2.4 billion a year between 2002 and 2005 to an average of $3.9 billion for each of 2007 and 2008. And we've increased the number of projects dramatically to 123 a year. More than one-third of this lending is for sub-Saharan Africa. The World Bank Group as a whole increased trade-related lending to middle-income countries from an average of $6.6 billion a year from 2002 to 2005 to an average of $12.6 billion in 2007 and 2008. This May, for example, the bank launched a $250 million integration and competitiveness project in Tunisia. The project is designed to improve competitiveness in reducing trade costs and improving the business climate, including through streamlined border clearance and e-government. IFC, our private sector arm, has added another $3.4 billion a year in 2007 and 2008 in its investments related to trade. IFC is particularly focused on building new productive capacity in low-income countries, especially in Africa. Crowding in the private sector is going to be essential to keep trade flowing. But success in aid for trade goes beyond simple dollar numbers. Technical assistance, analysis of policy options, and sharing learning about what works for trade may be less quantifiable, but they're critical. Think of it as the technology transfer of trade. For example, countries can benefit from training to upgrade the skill levels of their civil servants, tackle problems of corruption, and set up systems of accountability and performance standards. This crisis can turn out to be an opportunity. First, it's an opportunity for innovation. When trade finance began to dry up last year, strangling exports and imports around the world, the bank group worked together with Pascal Lamy and the WTO to mobilize additional resources. We first boosted our trade guarantee coverage to $3 billion for developing country banks, many of them in Africa. Then we launched a $50 billion global trade liquidity program in support of trade finance over 3 years. This afternoon, Pascal and I will be pleased to host a signing ceremony that will commit the first $2.5 billion of public and private funds for this program. This will help leverage additional funds. For every 40 cents invested by the bank and its public partners, the commercial banks will put up an extra 60 cents. And I'm particularly pleased that Donald Kabaruka and the African Development Bank could be part of this initial effort. Together with the UK, the Netherlands, and Sweden, the bank group has launched a new trade facilitation facility at the WTO COMESA Aid for Trade Conference in April. The first projects will target areas such as improving the Cherundu border crossing between Zimbabwe and Zambia, creating customs value databases for LDCs in southern Africa, and building the capacity of the Abidjan-Lagos Corridor Organization. Second, this crisis offers an opportunity to develop new partnerships, especially with the private sector. And who better to help us with trade facilitation than traders? We've already seen some good examples of productive partnerships with the private sector at the global level, notably with international logistics and express companies. We just had a meeting at the World Bank Group with private investors in Africa, for example, where we agreed to pilot new approaches to facilitate transit trade on the Abidjan-Lagos corridor in Nigeria. We'll start with actual shipments of such companies as Diageo, Lafarge, and Unilever. The crisis has revealed the importance of working with civil society, too. A good example is the Global Trade Alert Initiative, a web-based tool that draws on inputs from trade policy initiatives around the world to provide real-time information on trade-distorting measures and barriers. Third, the crisis can provide a political window of opportunity to address long-standing bottlenecks to competitiveness. Through our Doing Business and Logistics Performance Index, for example, we're both raising the awareness of the importance of reforms for trade competitiveness, especially trade facilitation, as well as identifying some of these key bottlenecks. And the payoffs can be large. For one major trucking company in Kenya, for example, improvements in trade and transport facilitation have translated into a 50% increase in vehicle utilization, from 8,000 kilometers to 12,000 kilometers per truck per month. And in all these areas, we're gaining knowledge, sharing experience, and identifying new problems to fix. And we also recognize we still have a lot to do. Because the real successes in aid for trade, of course, are in the results. In Mali, mango growers have seen an increase in the volume of their exports to Europe after the bank group helped improve practices in mango production, quality, and commercialization. Now rural smallholders can revive abandoned orchards and raise their incomes. In Morocco, garment exporters have benefited from improvements to trade by the government with the bank's support in trade facilitation, transportation, and logistics, which have reduced transport times to European markets. In East Africa, most trucks clearing the Malaba border between Kenya and Uganda now wait 3 hours instead of 3 days. This is a result of a one-stop border post concept, modernization, interconnectivity of customs systems. And this work also includes simplified processes at the port of Mombasa in Kenya and road rehabilitation in the northern corridor. We've seen similar results in other parts of the world. Improved competitiveness in Mauritius by focusing on reducing trade barriers. More efficient processing of goods through Laos and Cambodia after a major customs reform project. Soaring customs revenues and reduced waiting time for trucks in Afghanistan after a bank project helped modernize the major border crossings. Our predecessors forged a modern open trading system out of historic adversity. The financial crisis that we face is also historic. We must strive to continue on the same path of openness so our successors can realize the advantages of globalization. There are many planks upon which this recovery will be built, and trade is one of them. Trade was one of the first sectors that was decimated by contracting consumption in high-income countries. But it'll also be one of the first sectors to recover once the global economy picks up steam. Those countries that position themselves now to take advantage of renewed trade will accelerate out of the recession with the fastest momentum. And all of this means that your efforts at promoting aid for trade and in keeping markets open during the current global crisis have assumed a new urgency. Our shared efforts to boost aid for trade to help workers, farmers, and consumers engaged in trade will pay dividends in expanded opportunities, lower poverty, and higher growth. The World Bank Group will work hard to be your partner, so please help us to help you. For the trade ministers, ambassadors, and officials here, just think of all those times that you wanted the keys to your finance ministries. Well, a trade minister colleague is now at the helm of the World Bank, so let's not waste the opportunity. Thank you.